I mean, this is a gold program somewhat, right? The price of gold historically is correlated to long-term real rates. And the reason is not because of where inflation will be, but because there's a confidence that the purchasing power of the dollar will be managed to varying degrees. And so that's why there is a correlation.
Welcome back to SOAR Financially, where we discuss the macro to understand the micro. My name is Kai Hoffman. I'm the HJR Mining Guy on Twitter and the CEO of the SOAR Financial Group. And of course, Happy New Year to everybody. This is the third interview this year. I gave myself a deadline to say Happy New Year until the fifth one. So we got two more to go. But I hope everybody started off well. Health and wealth to you in 2024 and all the best. Educate yourself, use this information and all the other YouTube channels and information out there to educate yourself and make some smart, smart decisions this year. It's going to be a volatile year. It's going to be an interesting year. And we're going to kick off conversation number three of the year with Axel Merk. He's the founder of Merk Investments and my number one Fed watcher. He's always online when I'm watching the Fed and Jerome Powell speak. He's always live tweeting. You should follow him over on X as well because really, really good insights. And I'm really looking forward to this conversation because he can combine the macro and the micro, meaning he can combine the Fed watch plus the gold equities and the gold miners. So I'm really looking forward to this discussion before I switch over. There's a subscribe button here somewhere. I think it's here now. They keep moving it with every update, but I think it's right there. So hit that subscribe button. We truly appreciate it so we can bring high-quality guests like Axel back on the program. And, of course, just helps us with being visible in the market. Axel, it's time to welcome you on the screen. Thank you so much for your time. Good morning and Happy New Year.
Good morning. And to just give some flavor as to why I'm live tweeting for the Fed, and apologies, I also live tweet when the ECB comes out, that's sometimes not as popular. The reason is I got to take notes anyway. And by taking notes on Twitter, I get immediate feedback when I tweet some nonsense because that audience is unlike the folks that I work with, doesn't have any difference. And so if I tweet something wrong, they'll correct me. And so it's a very good medium. Twitter is what you make of it. And if you engage your audience properly, I think you get very valuable feedback.
Absolutely. No, I love it personally as well. So just following, just when Lagarde was speaking the other day as well, I think you were tweeting as well. And she had her sore throat or something or bronchitis. So
yes.
Really, really
and
interesting.
I get upset when I see policies I disagree with. And of course, who cares whether I disagree or not, because I don't have the bazooka. But it gets me motivated to express my thoughts. And so for better or worse, my audience gets to see that.
Absolutely. Actually, I mentioned it. You could perfectly combine the macro for us with the micro, meaning whatever the Fed is doing or the economy is doing, plus gold and gold equities as well. And I'm going to kick off with a question here that I just mentioned to you before hitting record as well. Did the Fed give us an early Christmas present this year by mentioning or being actually quite dovish in mentioning we're going to cut three times in 2024? Is that an early Christmas present for gold investors?
I'm just pausing here. Did the Fed decide to resign and put in rules in place? That would be a really nice Christmas present. No, it's not a Christmas present because it's not about what the Fed will do today. It is what the strategy is at the Fed. And I've argued for a long time that quote unquote higher for longer is not a strategy, it's a tactic. Now, the fact that higher for longer is coming to an end, yes, it's a positive for gold, as you're pointing out, gold equities. But I don't take any joy out of the fact that it's not been replaced with a strategy. It's just that, okay, hey, mission accomplished. And why don't markets go off and have a bit of a rally? The Fed is setting the risk-free rate in the US, and all asset prices are priced around that. And so it is helpful to know what is the trajectory. The economists call it the reaction function. Now, it is not. Think about a world, just for a moment, that would be a Christmas present world, where we could focus on where inflation is going to be, where we could focus where maybe unemployment is going to be, instead of focusing whether Madame Lagarde is sneezing or whether Mr. Powell utters a few words of this sort or that sort. The reason we pay attention to that is because they have the bazooka. But it's not helpful when they try to micromanage everything and anything in the markets. Now they have said that, oh, forward guidance is dead, but of course it's not dead. I mean, you hear that with all the other sound bites that are coming out. They're trying to micromanage what's happening in the market. And I think you summarized it in your introduction. It's going to lead to volatility because there's a lack of consistency in that, and it's not helpful. Now, ultimately, it doesn't matter. We have to deal with it. But a Christmas present, I would not call it.
No, just today, actually, Richmond Fed President Barkin came out again and said, hey, additional rate hikes are actually still on the table. So they're starting to backpedal a little bit, maybe micromanage, as you mentioned already, because they're seeing the market getting maybe or gaining a lot of momentum and maybe getting ahead of itself as well. Yeah. What would you say?
Well, the real problem is our friend Ben Bernanke, that everybody in this audience I hear loves. He wrote a book a few years ago, and during the pandemic, and then suddenly inflation came, so he had to add some chapters. But what he wrote in there, that once inflation is high, it's no longer linear. And that's really the real risk here, that by all means, inflation has been coming down, but there is no assurance it will stay down. There is wage pressure, and especially if you look in Europe, it's still quite a mess, for example, but there is no assurance. And so unless you have a plan, it's very difficult. And so what's happening instead is, okay, mission accomplished. And then you'll have one inflation print that's going to go up higher, and everybody's going to say, oh, my God, we're going to have another rate hike, right? That's not how you're supposed to conduct policy. I mean, it is how we are conducting policy. But and so what ultimately happens is the market says, okay, these guys will create some noise, and sure, maybe they do something, but they really, really don't want to hike rates. And so we'll take that into account. And by the way, one of the things, just for anybody who is watching what's quote-unquote priced into the market, there's always a tendency in a market to price in a little softness because of that unknown events. The probability of some shock hitting the market increases as time goes on. And so as you go further out, there's always an expectation in the market for some sort of cut. To just put that into perspective, so there is this dovish tint in the market. Obviously, counteracted to that is a tough higher for longer Fed that's no longer tough. And I use the reference mission accomplished quite intentionally. If you go back to that press conference, Powell, he had his thing, and then he was thrown off by a question and suddenly pivoted into saying, no, inflation is taken care of type of thing. And it's that sort of thing that then is some pushing back. Indeed, 2 days after the press conference, one Fed official went on CNBC on short notice, which suggests that maybe somebody said, hey, you got to push back against that messaging. Maybe it was a little overboard. But the substance is, of course, right, that the Fed thinks they have done their job, right? Except, as a reminder, they still have their backward-looking inflation averaging as their main target. They still haven't acknowledged that they truly messed up. The only thing that said, well, we had a tough environment, everybody else messed up as well. That's been the substance of the analysis so far of their failure.
When you look at the Fed messaging as well, like everybody expects the Fed now to sort of start cutting in March at the next the second to next meeting. I think there's one in January and then there's one more in March. Nobody expects a rate cut in January, but everybody expects them to cut in March. Is that too soon? Is that too late? And I think one thing you mentioned, and I've been trying to find the source in preparation of this conversation, is he wants to front run, or he wants to be earlier this time because he was too late raising rates, but he wants to be ahead of the curve this time, cutting. I think he said something like that during the press conference. I might be wrong, but is that the right way to go? Is that what they're going to do in March?
Well, I put my glasses on because I needed to check. 80% chance of a rate cut in March currently priced into the markets as we're talking. Federal Reserve policy acts with a lag, and several months of lag. And of course, there have been reasons why Fed policy hasn't acted quite as much in slowing the economy, with people being locked in into low mortgages and so forth. But at the other end of the spectrum, we do have several negatives come in. College loan repayments are starting up. Credit card debt is going up, and so forth. And so when the Federal Reserve starts cutting rate, it's not like you have a light switch that says, okay, now the economy has a jump start again. And so the Federal Reserve is already actually was higher for longer than on average in past of how long they stayed at their plateau. But there will be a lag. And it's presumably they see something bad as the key reason as why they're pivoting. And of course, there are plenty of candidates to be concerned about. The one very important one is probably commercial real estate. As a reminder, the Fed, of course, patched up the market by providing a lifeline that's converted an acute into more of a chronic problem. But the longer the rates are high, the bigger the issues are for commercial real estate. And there are, even though markets have been holding up, there is underlying weakness building up in the economy. And so the Federal Reserve almost certainly saw, okay, well, if we start cutting, it's going to be still another 6 to 9 months before that stimulus comes in. And by the way, that means the worst of the economy is probably just before the election, which is something I've been cautioning about for some time. And so, yes, they do have to do something. But again, it would have been far better if they had a rules-based policy, because then they could have cut earlier and everybody would know that, oh, if certain data come in a certain way, they'll hike again. Whereas they do this dance where they're petrified about a repeat of the 1970s that says, oh, we have to be late this time around, which is also why I continue to believe that a soft landing is a very unlikely scenario. Of course, we have this massive stimulus in the pipeline due to the infrastructure spending that would normally only be maybe put in place after recession. And so that's been one of the reasons why this has been softer. But it is still a gamble to suggest that this is going to be a soft landing, I would say.
One thought that popped in my mind, if they start cutting in March and everybody expects the market expects 6 to 7 rate cuts this year, let's assume it's six times a quarter is 1.25. No, more, 1.5, sorry, 150 basis points. Math has never been my strong suit. But isn't that too little too late? You were talking about commercial real estate and people are starting to have to refinance. Even a quarter or half or 50 basis point cut won't make a difference, because it doesn't matter if it's 7.5% or 8%, your mortgage rate is going to be way higher than it was before anyway.
Well, it's more of a political question. The banking system in any country is really a political bargain with the government. And in the U.S., that political bargain includes thousands of regional banks. That's really an accident in history. Our neighbors up north have just a handful of large banks, none of these small banks. And in the 80s, we had the savings and loan crisis. And there, similarly, the politics dictated that nothing is cleaned up, that these are propped up. And so what ultimately happens is that similarly now we have the small banks in particular have this exposure to small banks, to commercial real estate, in addition to having mismanaged interest rate risk. By the way, one of the key reasons I believe is that there are so many regulations that have come in that the pencil pushers are crossing the T's and forgetting that there's a forest and focusing instead on crossing the T's. And so most of these small banks should probably not exist. But politically, that's not acceptable. And so the Federal Reserve has thrown them a lifeline. And yeah, of course, a quarter percentage point here and there doesn't make a difference. But there is no significant energy to fix that problem. Now, there is some energy to do it. And maybe that's part of the reason they're cutting rate is because, hey, they said, we've got to clean this up. And in return, I'm going to give you a little lifeline with lower rates. But it's a process. And the implication and the reason we care is that a bank that is technically insolvent, even if they are functionally still working, will not extend a lot of credit. And small banks in particular cater to small and medium business. Now, of course, at the other end of the spectrum, we had a lot of private credit into the sector. There are all these private credit funds and so forth, but there is not a perfect match for that. It takes a while to ramp up. And the short of it is, that is a quote-unquote tightening of financial conditions, is a headwind to economic growth. And the Federal Reserve, that's increasingly micromanaging the economy, wants to stay on top of all of that, and they just don't have the breath to do that. But one of the implications is that growth is going to be more disappointing than people expect.
Yeah. Axel, are you aware of the website Trueflation?
Sure.
Yeah, actually, I just learned about it, so I find it interesting. And it shows the true inflation rate at 2.1% as of today. So that's a whole percentage point lower than the reported inflation number from this November, I believe. What do you make of that? It's like, because it's apparently more of a real-time reflection of data, while the inflation data that the Fed uses, for example, is lagging quite a bit. What do you make of that?
Well, every inflation measure has pros and cons. And we like to bash that the one the Fed is using is useless. The way they look at housing is asinine. I think that's the technical term. The question is what matters and what context matters. There is this rule of thumb that you should have the interest rates higher than the short-term inflation rate in order to fight inflation. What ultimately matters are two things. One is how the Fed uses those data, and then what the market thinks inflation will be in the medium to long term. And let me maybe address that elephant in the room, because especially in the gold community, people have very little respect for inflation measures that go out 5 to 10 years, because obviously nobody has a clue what inflation will do in those years. The reason why these measures are so important is because they're a reflection of the confidence of the market in the Fed's ability to contain inflation. They're not a measure of what inflation will be. They're a confidence measure. And so when you look at real interest rates further out on the curve on longer term rates, and apologies for getting more technical here, they give a sense of a barometer of the market's confidence in the Fed. And again, right, we may not like what the Fed is doing, but because they have a bazooka, there's generally confidence in what they do. At the other end of the spectrum, if the market were to lose confidence, they're really just zipping with a straw from the ocean, because the world is much bigger than even the Fed's power. And so they have to work with this illusion of massive power. And of course, their power is real, right? They can guarantee things. They can change rules, apparently, as we've seen since 2008. But these measures are very, very important in that context. And this is a gold program somewhat, right? The price of gold is historically correlated to long-term real rates. And the reason is not because of where inflation will be, but because there's a confidence that the purchasing power of the dollar will be managed to varying degrees. And so that's why there is a correlation. I probably didn't answer your question. So if you want to have an answer, you may have to rephrase it.
No, it's just that the true inflation, or the true inflation indicator, we're sitting at 2.12%, is a whole percent lower than the actual reported inflation, with that trigger and earlier response by the Fed and being it more the true indicator.
Well, the Fed will tell you they're looking at all the metrics. Ultimately, I think it's the lag effects that scare them. They were really concerned about being too early because they didn't want to repeat of the 70s. And the real shift is that they're no longer concerned about inflation being out of control. And so now they're switching gears, and they realize that even cutting rates in March will be late. And because of that, they go back to their forward guidance. If they signal already that they'll be cutting, that will be an easing in financial conditions. Now, of course, the market eases conditions, the more they have to backpedal because, oh, we didn't mean quite that much, right? And so that's why you have all these contradictory statements coming out, because it's an attempt to micromanage the market.
Let's talk landing scenarios real quick. You mentioned a soft landing is not really a possibility. What type of landing scenario do you have in mind? Is it a medium landing, a hard landing? And what does that look like for you, Axel?
Well, first of all, the reason we care, because I think that's more relevant before we lose everybody in technicalities. The reason we care is that if you have a soft landing scenario, equity prices, risk assets tend to discount that, look through that, and we live happily ever after. And equities can rally. If you have a hard landing scenario, you tend to have equities suffer, especially after a period where you have the Nifty 50 or a few high flyers. Those stocks could be severely under pressure as the market is focusing more on the glass of being half empty. You tend to have a more serious correction in equities. And when it comes to gold and gold mining, gold historically has a very immediate effect on changes in monetary policy and the perception of what will happen. Gold mining in particular in the hard landing tends to perform much better because other equities perform poorly, whereas financing becomes available to the mining sector, especially the smaller minings. And so they tend to be off to the races. I'm not giving investment advice here. And of course, there's a risk I'm talking my own book because I we do have extensive exposure to small miners, but it is, that's why I'm saying it is very important for any listener to think about where they think the market will be, because that impacts how different segments of the market will do. Now, that said, where I stand on this, I don't think we're going to have a 2008 implosion. Make that clear up front, especially since we saw that a year ago. If there is a real crisis, the Fed will take out the fire hoses immediately and guarantee whatever should be guaranteed and beyond, or should is probably the wrong word. In any case, because though we do have classic indicators of a slowing economy, and then on top of that, the Fed is still at that high level, and because of the lag effects, that downturn will be more pronounced, to use a more nuanced term. So I do think this will be a bona fide recession. Now, we've had recessions in the past that, unless you lose your own job, it's all is good, right? But keep in mind also that, especially on the job market is really the last one to fall. And so it's all good until it's not. And so just because we have good jobs numbers doesn't mean a recession can't come. Maybe most relevant is that people disagree on what's going to happen. And my role is not to tell you what the future will be. My role is to give you food for thought so you can think about yourselves about the risks of different scenarios. And I could be right, I could be wrong. To me, what I see in the market is that people disagree, as they rarely do. That's a good thing. That makes a market work. And so my own view is you have to diversify and take scenarios into account if they have a reasonable likelihood. Again, I don't have a crystal ball either, but I can give food for thought as to what I see as the biggest risk opportunity.
Absolutely. No, Axel, we really appreciate that. Bloomberg put out a massive article yesterday, I believe, sort of summarizing what Wall Street expects and the Wall Street expectations. And the intro, the first paragraph, it says, in the year ahead, investors are facing either the mother of all rallies or a sell-off of the ages. Exactly what you said. There's a lot of bifurcation.
Well,
then
I take back everything I said, because usually all forecasts, if there's one thing that's true about them, is that they're all wrong, right?
See, and I'm the one who's actually the end actually in that sentence, because I think we're going to have the rally first and then we're going to have a sell-off for the ages.
That's consistent with the volatility scenario, and I tend to subscribe to that. And part of the reason is because of the lack of strategy at the Fed. And so now keep in mind that this is the most forecast recession ever. And what that means is that anybody who can prepare has prepared. But of course, those who cannot, that have unsustainable business model, and there are plenty of those businesses around that were created in the 0% interest environment, those businesses will fail. The question is that enough to turn this economy into recession? And one way to think about it is that historically, the U.S. can deal with one problem. And they can maybe even deal with a problem with the U.S. and China, but it cannot deal with the problem if it is the US, China, and Europe. And so the Chinese are obviously trying to boost their economy. The Europeans are, oh my God, what they're doing is pretty sad type of thing. All of that to me supports me in my view that this landing is not going to be a soft landing. But then again, hey, I've seen pigs fly, because I'm a pilot and I've seen pictures of pigs and airplanes. So anything is possible.
I believe that. Axel, let's switch gears. Is gold too expensive right now, or is it priced at the right level?
Well, gold just is. Gold doesn't change, right? And so the world around it changes. I would say it's been remarkable how well the price of gold held up when the Federal Reserve pushed up interest rates as aggressively as it did. Keep in mind, right? Gold doesn't pay an interest. It's this barbaric relic, and it's competing with cash. Now, if you get rewarded for holding cash, then cash is worth more over time than the price of gold is. Then the price of gold will go down. The fact that the price of gold held up so well and now obviously reached all-time highs on a closing basis suggests that people don't believe that these interest rates can stay that high that long. One way to think about it is, I always think there are three types of gold buyers. There's the one that we tend to talk about. That's the one concern about the purchasing power of the dollar. The second one is the one that's investing in gold because of its diversification criteria, because the long-term correlation to equities is about zero. In 2022, that didn't work so well. In 23, that worked better. That doesn't mean the correlation is always zero. And then the third one is the speculator that just loves to jump on a good trend. That investor focused more on the meme stocks, but I have little doubt if gold had a big rally that those guys would come back. And so on a diversification point of view, I think gold is pursuing its role as good as ever. The question really is on the purchasing power side of things, is gold expensive or not? I do believe because we've moved beyond the higher for longer environment, this is an environment that's very favorable for the price of gold. With that risk that because it held up so well, that the upside may be more muted than many gold bugs might imagine. If you shift a little bit to the gold miners, the junior mining companies that are really credit plays have really suffered from the higher for longer environment. And so what could well be is that the gold miners are going to significantly outperform the price of gold as we're moving into an easier environment. That doesn't mean the price of gold will go down, but it means that that gap, so to speak, that there's going to be a catch-up. It's a highly speculative field, by the way, so I'm not telling people to pile in money that they can't afford to lose. Anybody who's invested in that sector should be aware that this is not investment advice. This is just what I think might happen.
Absolutely. No, I appreciate that, Axel. Well, JP Morgan, sort of predicts that as the Fed cutting cycle and falling U.S. real yields are expected to push gold prices higher, they expect gold to reach about 2175 on average in the fourth quarter. So that is interesting because if you look at 2175, let's use that. The one thing that is key here is the margin for the miners, right? Because the one reason I think the miners have suffered is that there's been massive margin compression with inflation, wage inflation, and cost inflation overall. Those margins are pretty much the same than when gold was at 1300. Right? If I look at Newmont all-in cost, the margin, the size of the margin or the spread is just the same than it was, $800 ago.
Since you've been pounding the table on that, I don't want to disagree with you too much, but let me disagree with you.
Yeah, please. This is a podcast. We're now, discussion.
You, of course, make valid points, but let me give you a few additional pointers. I think one of the problems of the big miners is that they've been so profitable because that makes them less levered to the price of gold if they produce a ton of cash. And they have been underinvesting in the industry. So that's been their biggest problem. And then the more you go down, of course, the cost, especially during COVID, has been a major challenge. But it has been the hostile financing environment that's put them very much at risk. And what's happening now with the price of gold moving higher, a lot of these junior miners have a lot of gold in the ground. But the permitting takes forever to get that out of the ground. And so, yes, the quote-unquote leverage, the price of gold goes up dramatically. But it doesn't help them if they can't find ways to finance the projects. And until very recently, it was only the best of these players that were able to raise money, and so everybody else was scrambling. And of course, with the majors just waiting for these junior guys to get even cheaper, we'll probably see more merger activities in the lower tiers. Even the junior players, there have been mergers. Sometimes they're just putting two problems together into one problem, and now they're bigger, and so now somehow they think it's going to be more valuable. So it's a very mixed field. And of course the junior miners, of course, can control costs much better because they don't have production, right? I do think that the worst of the cost is behind them, and so yes, that is very helpful. The market historically, when there is a bull market, tends to go into the majors first, and then it goes downstream. But it's the cost side of things, I think, is one attribute. I do think that the quote-unquote Christmas present, as you call it by Powell, is most relevant for the junior miners because the higher for longer was really the biggest obstacle. And so that market is starting to come to life a little bit, both in terms of share prices, but also in terms of increased appetite for financing to use the environment we're entering here.
Absolutely. No, Zeb, you might be aware, I also run Orin Inc. We're tracking financings in the junior space. And as soon as the first rate hike hit, Jesus, English is a complicated language, wallets just shut. Like, risk capital disappeared. And especially the early stage explorers have been suffering tremendously.
And it's like in the venture capital sector in tech firms, right? You get financing for 2 to 3 years, and then you go back because you show your what you've improved. And if at that stage the financing environment is hostile, it creates an issue, right? I mean, and of course, yes, they can reduce expenditures and whatnot, and the best ones will have access to financing. But yes, it does impact the pricing. And as the audience probably knows, a lot of these companies go public very early, so they tend to be illiquid, but there is a public market for those securities.
Absolutely. Axel, sort of a last question. If you were to deploy capital right now, where would you deploy it in the mining space right now? And don't have to share names, just more of maybe size of the company, development stage. That's what I'm hinting at.
Well, anybody who looks up my public disclosures has seen that I have been an insider buyer at one complex. Let me just put it this way. I don't want to mention it by name, do not have any disclosure issues. But basically, I do believe that the junior mining side has tremendous opportunities right now. Again, it is a highly speculative sector. So don't put your money there unless you can afford to lose it as well. The reason why I mentioned kind of a group is because some of these companies will fail. Almost by definition, because it is really at the exploration phase. You're literally looking for gold in the ground. I mean, we only invest in things where we know that there are known assets in the ground, but it is a speculative area. And so I do think this year will be a good opportunity for those. But I invest in there for many reasons. And one of the key ones is, of course, that I do believe that I think that sector will do well.
Absolutely. My portfolio is mostly junior mining companies as well, so I've been suffering for the last 2 years, and can't wait for a bit of a turnaround here in this sector. Axel, that was a fantastic conversation. I promise you to keep it at about 30 minutes, and I think we hit the mark. Really appreciate your time. Where can we find more of your work, Axel?
Well, you pointed to Twitter at Axel Merck in the beginning. That is probably a way to follow me. Come to our website, merckinvestments.com. I can't discuss our products here, but you can get there from that site. We do have a newsletter. Sign up for that at merckinvestments.com. Yeah, engage, reach out to us. If you hear us in the news, we've been in the news for some items. Reach out with any questions. I would love to communicate directly with shareholders, anybody who sees what's happening. And would like to reach out to us. And in a few weeks, maybe we can talk about it on this program. I'm intentionally cryptic here because I can't talk about it more specifically. But come to merckinvestments.com and to Twitter at Axel Merck.
Fantastic. We'll definitely catch up in a few weeks and get the nitty-gritty on what is happening there in the background. Fantastic. Axel, thank you so much for your time. All the best in 2024 until we catch up again, of course. And everybody else, thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this episode here on SOAR Financially. If you did, do us a favor. Hit that subscribe button. I think it's here somewhere. I don't know. Over there. Really appreciate it. Leave a comment. Leave a like. Do you have exposure to the miners? How are you exposed? What do you think gold price is going to do? Do you agree with JP Morgan? Are we going to average out at 21.75 by the end of Q4 this year? Are we going to be higher? Going to be lower? Let us know your thoughts. Really, really want to hear from you. Leave a like as well. It helps us tremendously with the algorithm, and YouTube shares our story then a little bit more than maybe others as well. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll have lots more content coming this week. Thank you so much.